SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, at the races on this Tuesday, and you know, you never know when you lose a horse like Evening Attire. It comes at any time, and the opportunity to talk to Pat Kelly, and we'll reach Joe and Mary Grant later in the week. But Sean Bridgmahan, when you look at the career of Evening Attire, and you know, you realize that with all the different riders that he had, Sean really had the majority of the wins, and he won 15 times. Sean won 7 times on him, and particularly, you know, at 3 and 4, and it included the big grade one, the only grade one win of his career in that Jockey Club Gold Cup, when he really was emerging. And Sean also was aboard on that $130 win in the Queens County. There's so many things to talk about with Sean Bridgmahan, though, because the winter is going smashingly again. He won the Fairgrounds riding title last year, and he's well on his way to another one this year. It's always fun to say hello and Happy New Year, Sean Bridgmahan.
Hey, Steve. Happy New Year to you too, buddy. How you doing?
Excellent, and I hate being the one that passes along news like this morning with Evening Attire, but, you know, 21, and he lived a good 10-plus years at Akendale, and he's a horse, Sean, so many people really had affection for, and you had a really pronounced part of his career together.
I did. He came at a very, very good point in my career when I was just getting started, so he's got significant meaning to me, just in the case I had lost a bug like the few years prior, and here comes a horse that kind of escalated me to a different level, and, you know, put me on where the trainers would allow me to ride big races, because I've ridden him, and he stepped up at multiple times for me and ran his heart out for me, and I've definitely had a good connection with him.
And that's what Pat said, too. Pat said that you particularly latched on with him and had a real good feel for him. And I've said many times about watching you as a rider, you were terrific on the front end and really underrated on the I love when I see you on a speed horse, but this is the kind of horse, and I suppose Evening Attire probably had a lot to do with you getting a little bit of a reputation as somebody good with horses from off the pace. But just earlier this morning, Pat said you had a great feel for when to say go with him.
And, you know, he was just a smart, you know, very genuine.
Summer is one of the best times.
Whenever you're ready for him, and he's always there. But on another note, Pat did such a phenomenal job with him. Just it goes to show you the longevity, and not many horses last as long as he did. That's just because the good job that Pat had did with him, and to have him around that long. And Pat and his crew made it easy for me, and obviously he was a pleasure to ride. Like I said, when you call up on him, he was always there, and he puts his heart out there for you all the time.
You rode in October of 01 at Belmont the first time, and Pat, basically, that was his first time around two turns, and that was on the grass, and then you went on a real streak. What was the early, you know, comments from Pat to you about him?
Well, Pat is just, he's very easy to get along with and ride for. He basically doesn't never give you instructions or say anything. He just lets you ride your race, which is gives you the most confidence there is. You know, there's not much pressure, and, you know, just believe in his training ability and gave me a leg up and give me, and say good luck. But the day he ran on the grass, he actually ran a really, really good race, and I really think that if they did put him back on the grass, he would have done some good all the, you know, that day. I was trapped, I was stuck, and I could not let him run. And obviously, you've seen the way his running style is. When he does make his run, you just got to get him clear and give him some racetrack. And that day I was just bottled up down and just could never give him daylight. And I thought it was a better race than it happened to be.
You know what's funny about that? He was only beaten three lengths, and he lost to some very good allowance horses, including Winter Glitter, who won, and a personal favorite, a very tragic horse, Del Carroll and Pont Street's Tap the Admiral, who would later go on and win a graded stake and then contract colitis X and die, which was really sad. But Tappy was a wonderful, wonderful horse. From that point, the blinkers went on, and then you went on this tear, the Discovery, the Queens County, and the Aqueduct Handicap, three straight graded stake wins with you and Evening Attire.
Yeah, it just seemed like when he got back, and obviously he beat a very, very good horse in the Discovery called Street Cry, and from there it's just escalated, and actually have one of the coolest pictures hanging up in my house. I was winning on him a day, and it was absolutely snowing out in the middle of winter, and coming down to the wire, all you can see is snowflake, white racetrack, and this big gray horse coming down the lane by himself. I'm like, it was like the coolest picture there is. I still have it. And after that, like I said, he just went on a tear, got his confidence up, and basically I went on a really good ride, me and him together.
You know, when I was going through the chart and his career, and noting, and particularly when I listened to the race call of the Jockey Club Gold Cup, it popped in my head. I said, I wonder if this was Sean's first grade one. And it wasn't. I had forgotten that you had won a pair of Carter handicaps already.
Right, on Brutally Frank and Peep and Tom, but... There were, you know, obviously winning grade one's not easy, but a prestigious race like the Jockey Club kind of excel you to a different level, in which, you know, he gave me my first mount in the Breeders' Cup Classic also, which was a very good thing, and he ended up running fourth that day. But I thought, yeah, riding the horse long, like you said, with his versatility and the horses that he's beat, kind of opened up a lot of people's eyes. And, you know, he became a fan favorite, obviously, like you said, and he's definitely one of my favorites.
Well, that Jockey Club Gold Cup, you beat real horses, and he got so good that summer, the Saratoga Breeders' Cup Handicap win, and the Suburban, and I probably could go find the video of this. The comment is three wide mild rally, and I'm looking at the splits. The splits were, you know, they weren't particularly sharp in the Suburban. And, of course, Macho Uno, you came chasing. He got out a little bit late in the mass cap.
Yeah, you know, like a horse like him is always victimized of pace, of succumbing pace in the race. And, you know, unfortunately I was bottled up and wasn't able to get free sooner than I could. And, obviously, he tries every time. But once he did, you know, he's got such a big stride. And you just got to find him some racetrack when he decides that he wants to give it to you. And I wasn't able to get free earlier than I would have anticipated or I wanted to. And, you know, unfortunately, we got beat that day.
You know, in the Jockey Club, if you watch the video, Durkin, the first horse that gets mentioned, is Attire, because he didn't start well. And you were very patient.
He never does. You know, that's what's compromised him a lot of times in his races, is because his ability to, he doesn't break fast like a springer does. He basically, you know, comes out of the gate, flops out of there, and usually spots his rival a bunch of lengths, and, you know, he usually overcome it and get the job done.
You know, that day, too, you did a tremendous job just basically setting up, and then one of the things that when you watch the video, and it's not high def, obviously, it's you know, 15, 18 years ago, it's tough to kind of see him in those silks, and you're kind of watching for him, and you saved plenty of ground. And, you know, there's horses that are trying to rally wide, and here he is basically in the three path, and you split horses, and he really ends up winning easy in that Gold Cup.
Yeah, you know, obviously, like you said, when he left the gate, if you knew the horse, you see the way he was built like more of a marathon kind of horse, long, lanky, big stride kind of horse. So he didn't, you know, push off and leave there like a fast sprinter would. So kind of victimized him a little bit on his trip. So when he breaks last, the next best thing is to just sit there and save some ground or save as much ground as you can. And then later on, just find something thing and just show him some racetrack. That's usually how he comes running them down late. But yeah, he was able to save a lot of ground when being at Belmont with that big sweep and turn, you know, gives you a better chance of giving him a chance to save a lot more ground than some of those smaller racetrack, and that helped him. And usually the main thing is off the turn, when he turned for home and he get him to switch back to his right lead, his kick is really, really good. And I was able to follow the top two in front of me and then angled out and find him some racetrack about the eighth pole. And he just, like I said, the main thing off the turn when he switches to his right lead, he usually finds an overdrive for you.
And that he did, and wins the Gold Cup, your first grade one in a route race after two Carters, and there has been plenty since then. After that, Jockey Club, you mentioned the Breeders' Cup Classic, and he really found his best stride late. That race at Arlington, things might have gone a little differently if they, you know, and obviously it's one of the great upsets, along with Arcang, Valponi's win, and certainly we'd never want to take that away from P.G. Johnson's legacy. But if they run that race 100 times, Sean, he probably wins a couple.
Oh, absolutely. And that year I did have a choice to ride Valponi or Evening Attire, and I stuck to riding Evening Attire, right? And I gave up Valponi, which ended up beating me in the Breeders' Cup Classic anyway. But, the track was playing a little bit more not to his style, because he comes from further back, and it was had some moisture in it, one of those cold days. And unfortunately, you know, he just got going too late. And like I said, it wasn't playing to his style that day. But he still gave me a gallant effort.
Well, 7 wins, a total of 15 in his career, and 7 of them came with you. And the other, in fact, I'm just looking, he, on dirt, this is really interesting, on dirt, he only missed the board, missed a check, I should say, finished worse than 5th only 6 times in his entire career. And on dirt, he never missed a check with you. First, second, third, or fourth, every time.
Yeah, like I said, him and I basically got a bond going together, and, you know, we basically got along very well, and I understand what he wanted. And, you know, I knew he's not a very fast-breaking horse, so I usually just leave him alone and just get him to come running and, you know, just ask him the last part of the race, depending on how far I am from the leader. That's how I usually ride him. And, you know, we've been very effective doing it that way.
Just a great horse that won fans. I mean, the people that are responding, Sean, online, and you know,
their
stories.
Even when after Funny Side won the Derby and he was running against, and they had the big rivalry thing, Even an entire Funny Side, and believe me, they were all cheering for Even an Attire. He become really a big, I don't know if it's because he's this big gray horse that everybody loves, but he had a big fan club.
Well, and you a big part of his success, 7 of his 15 wins with Sean Bridgeman in the irons. And Sean, I'm not going to let you slip away without a couple of notes about what's going on right now this winter. And of course, last year, a tremendous season at Fairgrounds. You're having another one. You seem tracking toward another riding title at Fairgrounds. You're going to be out of town, though, on Friday and Saturday. Let's start with those two horses. And I had Jinx Fires opening week. I couldn't wait. I was on vacation after the Sugar Bowl, and Jinx had to come on. I had to get him the first week we came on the air. Very excited about Gray Attempt, who I think looks like a horse that's going to stretch out easily. Talk about the Smarty Jones on Friday.
That gray attempt, hopefully we can find another even attire, being him being a gray horse, because I'm in need of one of those. We all can use one at this time. So he is definitely an honest horse. I've ridden him all three of his starts, and he's gave me very, very good races throughout his three rides that I've gotten. He's a pretty straightforward horse, which Jinx has done a phenomenal job with him. He makes my job easy because I basically break. He puts me in the race, whether it's be on the lead or close to it, but he makes my job easy because he's tactical enough where I can place him wherever I want. And first time I rode him, he got tired and, you know, come back at Churchill, and he won pretty convincingly. Beat a nice field of horses, to be honest. A couple horses in there, they were real high on. He shipped him down here, ran him back 3/4 of a mile, and he was very impressive that day. Also, and Smarty Jones on Friday, he's got an outside position. Like I say, he's a pretty forwardly placed horse, which I'm going to let him run away and do his thing and see where he places himself. And then, you know, if that be on the lead or close to it, that's, I'll be happy with it. And I think he's a pretty honest horse. When I call up on him every time I've ridden him, he's given me everything he has.
He finished the Sugar Bowl, I thought, with real, you know, with a real keen look in the late stages, and the way he galloped out. And Jinx agreed when I asked him about stretching out. He's a grade R, and he's out of a consolidator mare. And you know, I can only imagine now he's been transferred when the opportunity came to move the barn to Oaklawn. Jinx has got him over there, so you know you're not getting on him in the morning. But you know, he's had a couple of 5-furlong, in fact, a series of 4 5-furlong works at Oaklawn, and I just get the sense that this is a horse that we're going to be talking about between now and Arkansas Derby time.
I think so, too. He's a very, very smart horse also. You know, he's got a high cruising speed, like you said, and he's been doing good. Like I say, every start he's been getting better and better, and he's just an improving three-year-old, and I don't think, like I say, he's very smart. I don't think stretching out would be an issue for him.
Well, and of course, you also get fairly quick run to the wire off that turn, so if he's going to have to deal, and there does feel like there's some speed that is going to want to go with him. I mean, there's a few horses that are stretching out first time around
from
turns.
Sprinting, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And like I said, the advantage that I have, I draw the outside, and he's a very smart tactical horse that if I need to adjust with him, I don't see it being a problem because I think he does things the right way. And he's not a runoff, one need the lead kind of horse. I just think he's a quality 3-year-old that's getting good at the right time and very excited about riding him.
Well, we're looking forward to Friday, opening day. And then from as soon as you're done there, you've got to turn around and get to Florida for the Pegasus. Tom's the Tot. We're waiting for the draw here shortly.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another exciting horse that I'm really looking forward to ride. Ever since I got the opportunity the first time to ride him, I've always loved him. I think he's a horse with a lot of quality and tries every time, and I think we haven't seen the best of him, even though he's as talented as he is. He hasn't run a lot of time, but the times that he has, he's shown flashes of ability that only quality good horses have shown, and I think he has all the tools, and he's doing very well, and looking forward to riding him.
Well, we'll wait and see where this turns out on the draw front with Tom's the Tot. I got to also bring up two other horses that just this last week, in the course of just keeping track of racing, it just so happened we had Neil Howard last week, and that was the circumstance of trying to support Roddy McKenzie and his recovery from that terrible accident a couple of Mondays ago. And I brought up the filly that he was debuting, and you were on board, Desert Ride. She looks like she could be any kind.
Yes, she can, and being by a first-time start, she was a first-time start in for her to do what she did and flew home the last part of it, like I said, I think that filly has a huge future in front of her. Her turn of foot was impressive the other day. And she and Neil, you know, been doing a good job with her, and I was expecting her to run pretty good. And the fact that her turn of foot was so devastating on the turf, I'm looking forward to riding her again just because she was very impressive.
Well, always happy for Neil to do well, and we were also watching with interest the allowance race, and then Brad Cox and you connect with Owendale, who looks like he's going to jump right in and be involved in the trail to the Louisiana Derby.
I think so. Owendale is a very, very improving kind of horse, and I always felt that way about him just because early on, I've ridden him majority of his career. The only time I hadn't rode him is when he broke his mane in Indiana. Fernando rode him. But from day one, he was a big colt that just had a big stride to him, but mentally just hadn't quite put it together. And I told Brad, the more this horse run, the better he'll definitely get. And the other day when he ran, obviously he ran with some high-profile horses, with two Tappet colts being in there, one from Steve, Brad's other horse, and he stepped up to the plate, and I still think there's room for improvement with that horse the more he gets to run, and I think that's another one you still haven't seen the best of him because, like I said, every time they let him over there, he's getting better and better, and it's just like a big kid, and he's starting to mature and mentally know what he's got to go over there and do, and you saw that the other day when he kind of put it together, but I still think there's a little bit more there for him to give.
Interesting. Well, it sounds, and I'm just guessing toward the Risen Star, there's going to be a number of major horses, Sean. You're sitting in a great spot, and we'll look forward to Friday and Saturday, and then I'll look forward to seeing you when we come to New Orleans. I should also mention a horse that you rode toward the end of his career. I just saw the announcement yesterday or this morning. I noticed that Genstar announcing the Chocolate Ride has been retired, and you had some success with him too.
Oh, he was a cool little horse, and he deserved it. He's accomplished so much, and I'm very happy that, you know, they did retire him, and he went sound because he's accomplished a lot. He's done a lot in his career, and he deserved a good retirement, and he was just a cool, cool horse to ride. A little kid can ride him. Like, when I ride him, I take him away from the pony. I warm him up. He's easy to gallop, and very easy to ride. He's just a straightforward horse, and he's another old campaigner that just lays it down every time you lead him over there, and could not be happier. I wish him all the best in his retirement because he's done a lot and accomplished a lot and deserve a good retirement.
And it's kind of nice that he went out with a win in November, right before Thanksgiving, the last start of his career, and you went out a winner with him.
Absolutely, and he deserved it. Like I said, he's done so much, and he's such a cool horse. And, you know, you always want to see them leave the racetrack on a high note, and he happened to get that and went out a winner, which he was a winner all his career. So,
and really a nice the way in which, in fact, you when he came to Brad, when he came to the barn. Because I think people might forget that he originally was in the Oxley Cassie factory, and then came over his first race for Brad was a 40 claimer, which you rode him, and then Florence Giroux had a few tries on him, and Joe Talamo actually before Joe. Looks like Joe rode him in the Muniz and the Fairgrounds Handicap when he won those back-to-back in 15. So 700,000 in earnings, just a little under 10 wins, 31 races, the Candy Ride Gelding Chocolate Ride. Sean, I appreciate this very much, and looking forward to Friday at Oaklawn, and we're also looking forward to watching you in Pegasus and then seeing you in February.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Not
I'm
at
very
all.
Exciting for this weekend, too.
You got it. Evening attire, and now a whole, here it is years later, and Sean Bridgman zeroing in on another Fairgrounds riding title this year, and well-mounted, and Neil Howard and Brad Cox and many more. Jinx Fires with the Gray Attempt on Friday. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. It's exactly 11:30. Perfect timing. We'll get Jeremy Plonk in here, and we'll watch the corner of our eye as they put the Pegasus Field together down at Gulfstream. We'll see what we're trying to find. Did you find it, Case, or are we still looking for the feed? How'd we do? All right. Well, we'll look right now. I got 2 minutes. Back after this. Jeremy Plonk, Countdown to the Crown, and Pegasus.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah, Express Bet. Give me 12 grand to win on the 9 at Gulfstream. Yeah, that's what I said. 12 grand. 12,000 smackaroos. 12,000...
Mikey! Hang up the phone! You crazy? You can't bet that much.
Quiet, Joey. I'm practicing.
Practicing? Practicing for what? Divorce?
No, I'm practicing my Pegasus Big Bet with my friends at ExpressBet.
Ooh, the contest is back?
And better than ever. All you gotta do is register for free at ExpressBet.com. Then you'll earn entries for every bet you make until January 14th. The more you play, the more chances you have to win.
And you win a $12,000 bet on the Pegasus?
And a VIP trip to Gulfstream with airfare, hotel, tickets, it's all included. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got some more practicing to do.
Yeah.
So, ExpressBet, you still there? Good. Like I was saying,
ExpressBet is the official online wagering partner of the Pegasus World Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to bet today. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel, and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Talking to the biggest names in the sport of kings, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I remember the night that kid cut off his right arm in a bit to save a bit of power. He got 50,000 watts in a big acoustic tower. Security's so tight tonight. Whoa, they're ready for a tussle.
So it goes, so it goes, so it goes. The way it's going, no one
we're back at the races, and okay, good job, Case. Case went to XB for it, and it's also at I found it on Facebook. And here's Billy Badgett, and oh my gosh, I'm gonna the girl that does the Spanish language broadcasting. Claudia, right? Claudia Spadaro? Yeah, I think so. Claudia Spadaro. Like Charo. they're doing their preliminaries for now. So let's get Jeremy Plonk in here, and we'll get Jeremy in when the time comes to let you know what's going on the pill draw. We'll do that. In the meantime, Jeremy joins us. Countdown to the Crown. Week 3 is in the books, and I guess technically week 3. The third issue, Jeremy, right?
Yeah, that's right. Three down and about 21 to go. It's usually about 23, 24 weeks before we get through everything. Not that we're counting down to that point yet, because it's still the build-up, and it's an exciting time, because we saw a really nice performance by War of Will last week, and really kind of the first performance of the new year that made you think, okay, now we've got somebody. You know, that was a big-time effort, and looking forward to seeing how far he can go, just like all these three-year-olds.
Now, give us a little bit, flesh it out, your thoughts. There were so many questions that needed to be answered, whether it was horses stretching out, horses that were coming off wet tracks, including War of Will. That was a little bit of, the question of the people who were uncertain about what to expect from him.
Yeah, you know, if you wanted to take the wait and see and see what he could do on a fast main track, yeah, there was still quite a bit of moisture in the racetrack at Fairgrounds, even later in the day by race 12 and into the evening hours there under the lights at Fairgrounds. You know, so has he had kind of a dry, powdery racetrack to deal with? Not necessarily, but he answered a lot of those questions. And what he did, I think, that is encouraging is he won the LeCompte in the same manner that every horse has won the Kentucky Derby in the last 5-6 years. That length and a half off the pace, pounce, take command, hold them at bay through the lane. You know, that first over kind of trip, a length and a half off the lead, has just been dynamite going back to California Chrome and others over the last several years. And it's kind of been a cut-and-paste trip in the Kentucky Derby. If he can run like that stylistically, that puts him in a great position. You know, you're not a need-to-lead horse, and you're not trying to come from way behind, which can be dicey in a Kentucky Derby field. So stylistically, I mean, just when you're scouting these contenders and say, can they be Derby winners? You know, you've got a lot of things. Are they talented enough? Are they fast enough? Are they durable? Will they handle the distance? But also running style comes into play at some point, too. And he's at least got the right one. He's got a win over the track at Churchill. Now, I always say, I caution people, Churchill in the fall, the way they prepare the track, and Churchill in the spring are not the same the way the track is maintained and prepped. They put a lot more water on the racetrack in the spring and tighten it up. In the fall, with temperatures dropping at night, it's a little more powdery and loose typically. And this horse caught a wet track at Churchill. So just because he ran well at Churchill Downs doesn't mean he's necessarily going to love the footing from the fall to the spring. I think that's a misnomer people run into. But the fact that he's been stabled at Churchill for an extended time in his career, it's going to be a home game for him when he gets back to Churchill Downs. Mark Cassie with the shed row there. There's a lot of good positives for War of Will. And again, the way he won this race stylistically, I think, is the most important to him, because I think down the road, that'll come in handy. Also navigating a big field of 12. That never hurts. You're going to see Derby contenders get all the way to the first Saturday in May, Steve, and have not met a field of more than, say, 7, 8, 9 horses in many cases. So War of Will's got that big field experience in his cap already, and that helps as well. So I thought a really nice performance overall, the long stretch at Fairgrounds. That's good, I think, for preparing horses and something that is going to serve him well. Palm Creek Hustle, Manny Waugh, two horses coming out of the Sugar Bowl, run 2-3. That's good news for Jenks Fires horse, Gray Attempt, going into the Smarty Jones this Friday at Oaklawn. And I know you're high on that horse, listening to you talk to Sean just a few minutes ago. So good news for that runner coming out of the Sugar Bowl as those runners came back and ran 2-3. Disappointments for, Pluka Parfait. Didn't run Pluska Parfait. Just didn't run the race we expected. stumbled at the start. Maybe some excuses in there, but I expected a little bit more out of that one. And some of the others back in the pack, Tackett didn't fire with the kind of run we expected. Preston gave way. Malpay couldn't get the distance. I thought one of these stretch-out sprinters was the key to running second in the race, and I went Malpay as the price horse. Right idea, wrong horse. It was Hog Creek Hustle, and that's one I know that our mutual friend Seth Merrill, I was on his show, Capital OTB, on Saturday, and he was pitching hard for Hog Creek Hustle as a contender in there. Hopefully he caught the exacta.
I think one of the surprises ended up being that you didn't really have, the big field did not completely get the pace pressure that we were expecting. And that's what to me was a little surprising. And I suppose that played as much against Plus Que Parfait as anything, because you ended up with the two speed horses for them to be second and third behind War of Will. I thought that was a part of the story. The splits were not as aggressive as I think some of us thought. We knew there were only two or three horses, Malpay and Maniwa, that would be hell bent for the turn. But usually, when you get a field that size, you end up with just a few more forwardly placed horses that prompt the pace. That really didn't materialize.
Well, there might be a reason for that. The other three-year-old maiden races on the card, and there were three of them, three maiden specials going around two turns, were almost all one lap to first. They were complete meltdown races. So speed was getting crushed earlier on the card. Horses from the clouds were winning all of those races, the two-turn events. Al Stahl's horse won the six furlong race nicely, and that was in the sprint race at six furlongs. But the two-turn, mile and 70 and mile and 16th races, for the three-year-old maiden specials early in the card, we're all meltdown races, Steve. So, jocks ride these races. They see what's going on, and, maybe they figure, I don't need the press because they're going to come back to us, The track will bring them back, a demanding, tiring, drying-out racetrack. And, it definitely was a drying-out racetrack at Fairgrounds. If you saw it earlier in the day, it was a sloppy mess when they got started. By race 12, they label it fast. It's some degree in between, and it changed throughout the day. So that might have been a little bit of, riders assessing the racetrack and feeling a little overconfident that speed may come back to them.
The other event, of course, that has caught our attention, and talked to Mike Trombetta yesterday and Mrs. Weber over the weekend, you got to really pay attention to win going forward out of that Pasco.
No, he's back. Like World of Trouble last year was really fast in the Pasco and became everybody's hot horse for the Tampa Bay Derby. A lot of public handicappers were in that camp and ran his eyeballs out and running a good third. And, of course, he went on to become one of the better turf sprinters in America by the end of the year. Win looks like he has a lot of talent. And I'll tell you, he flatters a horse named Always Mining. I know you've had Kelly Rubley on the show. We talked about this a week or 2 weeks ago. This horse, Always Mining in Maryland, is just, every race that runs, something else flatters the form of this horse. And I think that there's a little quiet bubbling up there, I think, for a horse Always Mining that's under the radar that might do a little something this year. I think there's something there. And typically, if a horse is in the Mid-Atlantic this time of year, Laurel's got their run through, races like the Private Terms and the Miracle Wood, and we'll see him maybe to the Tessio and then into the Preakness. But if you're in the Mid-Atlantic this time of year, there's a lot of graded money and some Derby points to be had in New York. It's a short van ride. I think you could see a horse like Always Mining, if healthy and developing, maybe one for the Gotham or the Wood and one to take kind of serious.
Well, going to quickly give everybody a quick survey of the field that came together for the Pegasus turf side of things. Magic Wand drew the rail. Yoshida, the two horse. Channel Maker, the three. Aerolith, the Japanese Invader, 8-1. The four, Next Shares, for Richard Baltus. The five, Fahan Mora, the filly, Vladimir Sarin. The six, Bricks and Mortar, is going to be very tough in here, for Chad Brown and Seth Klarman. The seven, Delta Prince for Frank Stronach and Team Medina. The eight horse, Catapult, John Sadler, of course, going for the big Pegasus double. And this the runner that Ron Paolucci purchased. And Michelle Lovell had done such a great job with WW, and he draws the 10. So there's your field for the turf side of the Pegasus, and now they'll turn their attention to the main track. Back to our conversation in a minute. Let's see how quickly you got Jason and Alicia, and Acacia, Courtney, who won herself the Miss Connecticut title last week or 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, what'd you do last weekend? You don't want to play that contest with her.
she
How was your weekend? Not as good as yours.
Well, I don't know. don't get me in trouble here with this topic. I'm trying to Casey, pick up a little audio here. Let's see what XP's got.
We got to get set to make sure that we bring you the proper information on screen. So before we get set, again, just a couple more reminders about some of the things that we have offered on Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt about that. 12 race card, 11:30 a.m.
You can pull up from that. I don't need to hear about the $700. The cover charge for the 10 palms. Here we go.
Now we know more than anything you want to see the post positions for the Pegasus Dirt, so here we go.
All right, number four, Seeking the Soul.
Number four is Seeking the Soul, who ran in last year's Pegasus World Cup. He was fifth in that event. He won the Grade 3 ACK earlier this year. A Grade 1 winner, having taken the Clark Handicap last year, he was second in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile.
And he will go out for trader Dallas Stewart with Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, game racehorse, coming here to Gulfstream Park. Eight is the very blue-collar Gunavera.
Gunavera is a little bit of the Gulfstream Park hometown hero, if you will, the Fountain of Youth winner. He's really been impressive in pretty much every dance. He is coming off of a couple of in-the-money finishes, second in the Grade 1 Woodward, second in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and don't forget he was third in last year's Pegasus World Cup.
Absolutely, back-to-back Pegasus for Gunny. He's trained by Antonio Sano, Erod Ortiz Jr. with the mount. Next up, number two in the Pegasus World Cup Dirt, that is Something Awesome.
Something Awesome won the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic, the Grade 3 General George. He is actually 2-for-2 at this mile and an eighth distance, shipped in early to Gulfstream Park, getting a chance to get a feel here of South Florida.
Jose Corrales, the trainer, Hall of Fame jockey, Edgar Prado with the mount. 11 towards the outside is Imperative.
Imperative won the Poseidon a couple of years ago on the Pegasus undercard. Now we'll see him in the Pegasus World Cup. He is a graded stakes winner, having take the Charlestown Classic, and he's faced some of the top horses in training as of late.
And he is trained by Anthony Corderolo and will be ridden by Tyler Gaffleone. Inside post goes to the number one, Bravazo.
An ultra-consistent horse for the coach, Dwayne Lucas. He was third two starts back in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, second by just a neck last time out in the Grade 1 Clark. This is a horse that shows up every time.
And Gulfstream's leading rider, Luis Saez, will be aboard. And Dwayne Lucas, of course, the trainer. Number six, middle of the pack, will be Tom's d'Etat.
He's going to be stretching out in distance, but he was second last time out in the Grade 1 Cigar Mile behind another horse in this field in Pattern Recognition. Oh, excuse me. He is a lightly raced horse that they're taking a shot for. He won the Tenacious Stakes at Fairground last time out, won his last couple by open lengths.
And that'll be trader Al Stahl Jr. and jockey Sean Bridgemahan. Number seven goes to True Timber.
Now we look at the horse that was second last time out in the Cigar Mile behind Pattern Recognition. He has a tactical running style for Kieran McLaughlin. Got to be able to stretch out in distance to go the mile and an eighth, but he sure looks like a horse with a lot of talent.
And True Timber is trained by Kieran McLaughlin and will be ridden by Joe Bravo.
some the 9, 10, and 12 are
getting down to the last few stalls.
Problematic.
Post number 10 for last year's Florida Derby winner in Audible.
That's right. Won the Florida Derby right here at Gulfstream Park and then went on to be a close third in the Kentucky Derby. Came
three,
off
five,
of a layoff
nine,
after that
available.
Derby tried to win the Cherokee Run at Churchill Downs on Breeders' Cup weekend and is coming off of a second in allowance here at Gulfstream.
And he's trained by the all-time winningest trainer here at Gulfstream and Todd Pletcher, Flavian Pratt with the ride. Number five, a finalist for Horse of the Year and locked to be champion older horse, that is Accelerate.
The Breeders' Cup Classic winner. He is coming off of four straight grade one wins. He's 3-for-4 at this distance with a second, looking to make this last career run perhaps a la Gun Runner like last year's Breeders' Cup Classic winner did.
Absolutely, hoping to follow in the hoof prints of Arrogate and Gun Runner in the Pegasus, trained by John Sadler. Joel Rosario up on a horse who was just so good last year. Number nine, talking about international flair, goes to the undefeated Mexican superstar and Triple Crown winner in Kukulcan.
He is 14-for-14. He won the
City of Light and Pattern Recognition are left, and one of them's getting the 12 hole. So two of the real major players for this against Accelerate is going to be absolutely screwed in the 12 hole here.
And what a union here with Frankie Dettori riding a Kukulcan for trainer Fausto Gutierrez. A couple of posts left as we go to the
pattern
very
recognition
talented
gets screwed
number
here.
Three.
This is quite something. City of Light gets the three hole. That's it, Case. You can pull this up. City of Light gets the three, and Pattern Recognition ends up in the 12 hole. This whole concept is just preposterous. Jeremy.
Well, we had a blind draw, right? I mean, this wasn't in the post position.
No, I understand. This mile and an eighth, as we saw with the California Chrome, and whatever. To me, the whole thing is... you're going to pay for the privilege of being eliminated at the draw.
That's why they call it gambling. We've got 12 in here when, you know, a lot of discussion was how in the world are they going to get to 12? And they're here. The Breeders' Cup Classic winner is here again for the third straight year. It's as good a field as you can put together in January.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, there's a little international influence. The late John Asher would be cheering me on as I root for Kukulcan because I used to always take in our fantasy draft leagues the South American import, the Tomcitos of the world in our Triple Crown fantasy. So every year he would ask me who my South American horse was for the draft. So in John's honor, we'll give a little Kukulcan shout out here. Probably has no chance in this field, but I'm happy a horse like that is here. You know, I mean, that's part of the spirit of it. I remember the old DC International at Laurel when I was a kid, and the Russian horses would come over. And, hell, we didn't know what the Russian horses could do, but it was kind of cool to have them in there post-Cold War or in the midst of the Cold War at the time. So, you know, the international intrigue in a race like this, let's see. You know, who knows with Kukulcan if he can match up with some of these horses. Crazier things have happened. Mind That Bird won a Kentucky Derby, so you can always kind of go back to that. But Accelerate and City of Light are, you know, the two biggies from the West Coast. And at a mile and an eighth, Steve, you know, I think you get a truly run race at a mile and an eighth. The configuration of Gulfstream makes a mile and an eighth difficult because it's a 9-furlong oval, and I think that's what you're referring to in some of, you know, the outsides just being, you know, in really dire straits here. But a mile and an eighth typically is a very truly run race. A mile and a quarter can get a little quirky. A lot of the horses can't get it. A mile can kind of bring some of the speed horses to too much of an advantage. A mile and an eighth is really, you know, you get to the Haskell and you see the percentage of winning favorites, and the right horses generally punch them out at a mile and an eighth. So, you know, to me, on paper, it would come down to City of Light and Accelerate. They're both well drawn in here. If you were going to get creative with somebody else, Pattern Recognition would be the next horse, as you were saying, as the draw was unfolding. And with him out in the 12 now you have to scratch your head and say, probably not.
What you wanted to have happen here? You wanted Bravazo and Gunavera to get outside posts where it wasn't going to really matter to them. They're going to drop out of it and come with their run late, and probably, I suppose, Kukulkin, too, could have been put out there in those. I mean, the statistics are just hideous when it comes to, you know, the trip at the mile and an eighth. So I don't know. This has always been the problem with this concept and the distance.
That the higher ranked horse should get a better post position?
No, if you're going to do this, knowing that you've put some of your horses that are going to be involved at a huge disadvantage. I don't know, maybe discount their entry fee, or I don't know. I just limit the field to eight or maybe 10. I don't know. I can tell you this.
If you limit the field to eight, the gambling on it goes tremendously down. We know that for sure. So if it's more of an exhibition race among the horsemen playing with their own money, which is a very good topic of conversation for this specific race with the way the entry fees are taken, then perhaps you can say, okay, well, this isn't necessarily about the handle. This is about the showcase of the eight people who want to push their chips to the middle of the table and take the big gamble. So we'll give everybody a cleaner shot at it. With the smaller field size, that argument, works okay. But, when Big Brown drew the 20 hole in the Kentucky Derby, it wasn't time to blow up the starting gate. He was the best horse and he won it. Now, I know that's a lot longer run than the first turn, but it had never been done before. And it was done then. So if Pattern Recognition is the right horse to win this race, he'll still win.
Well, we've got about 90 seconds, Jeremy, and I know it's early yet after the draw yesterday, but a quick Smarty Jones thought.
Well, the horses from Remington, I think from the Springboard Mile, are useful in there. Long range Toddy's going to come from just a little bit off of it. I think Six Shooter, a horse for Paul Holtis in there, is going to be really interesting. I thought he would run a lot better in the Springboard Mile. He ran a poor race that day, but he came back at Delta in the Bull Ring and ran a really nice race in the Big Drama, and he's drawn well. I think Six Shooter under Stewie Elliott's got a shot in there at a nice price, and he'll be local there all season long for Paul Holtis. At Oaklawn, and he's training well. So I think Six Shooter's an early horse at the beginning of the week that I'm taking a long look at. Haven't gotten deep into my handicapping, but certainly Gray Attempt off that Sugar Bowl win and the way his form was flattered with the 2-3 finisher stretching out to run so well in the LeCompte. You have to respect him quite a bit for Jinx Fires, and we'd all be rooting for Jinx.
Big time. And we talked to Sean Bridgemahan a little bit earlier, as well as Dr. Stephen Allday and Andy Serling and Jerry O'Dwyer needs supervision. The win in the Silver Bullet Day, and Pat Kelly, of course, too, about Evening Attire, and Jeremy Plonk just now. And look forward to Friday. Jeremy will have the Countdown to the Crown next edition, as well as the Pegasus World Cup betting guide at Express Bet, as well, and all the other stakes are going to be looked at, right?
Eddie Olczyk, Brent Musburger, Jeff Siegel, Johnny D, Millie Ball, myself, several other handicappers. The whole card under the microscope for the Express Bet Pegasus Wagering Guide.
Outstanding. And, of course, Friday and Saturday, Pegasus Betting Challenge. Still available for everybody. Santa Anita, Gulfstream, or at Express Bet. We'll talk to Jeremy next week, and we'll talk to you in the morning. If you missed anything, replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Visit the website. Case will have the archives up in a little, and podcast and the stream. And good luck if you're playing today. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.